Hello and welcome to another episode of Loose Cannon. We are back once again talking about the season of the witch. This is going to be our last season of the witch, technically, episode, because we're gonna talk about the second actual lore book, Rites of Passage. And then next week, on our next episode, it is 2 days before season of the wish.
Yeah.
Season of the Wish and season 4, and we're gonna talk some theories on our next episode. But I mean, we kind of nailed it last week, didn't we?
I was waiting for you to bring it up.
Yeah, like sometimes I'm like,
I mean, sometimes our spiral offs just end up being just dead on.
Yeah. And you know, it's very,
I mean, goodness gracious, dude. And I will say this, I hate the expression, I use it all the time now because I guess I'm old, I don't know. But hindsight's always 20/20.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny how much you know you're on the right path, but you don't know until it's already happened.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're sitting here, you know, diluting the lore, trying to understand and digest everything that they're telling you for years, and you posit it theory after theory, and you come up with ideas about what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And then one day it just confirms it, right? And yeah. So you're like, ah, I knew it all along. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you start digging up old stuff about yourself. And this is, I'm just speaking on behalf of like our community, because I was watching all these people on Twitter show all these places where they basically called the season of the wish. And I was just like, that's mm-hmm. really neat. A lot of people were on the same path, picking up the same, yeah. you know, just from all different areas.
Yeah. Bungie does a good job about kind of like laying the groundwork on things like that. Like long ago, they called it planting seeds, you know, and yeah. that's what they do. That's what they've always done.
That's crazy, because my Ishtar page is open up with the word search seed right now.
Yeah, when it comes to Amkara specifically, I remember, I think it was like in year one, like before Taken King, I'd started saying that I thought Amkara were, because it didn't make sense to me that Ahamkara could be these great big disastrous things, but also they're tiny because we wear them, and they're not fucking Brontosaurus ribs on Fred Flintstone's right. car, you know. And I was like, okay, so do right. they like change their shape? Like, that was for some reason, there was just like this idea in my head that I was like, they can change their shape. They're like not from here. They're not of our universe. And I had said that. And then I think it wasn't until like, I think Rise of Iron, when we got a confirmation on that. It was either like Rise of Iron or Destiny 2. And I was like, I fucking knew
yeah.
it.
Yeah. That they were in fact shapeshifters, because in the yeah. lore, I think it was Shax's lore, where the beast he kept fighting was changing, or maybe it was like Korra.
That was from Forsaken,
right? Yeah, which was nice, because they kind of explained and fleshed out the story further. But mm-hmm. I know what you're talking about. We had the shapeshifter comment, mm-hmm. But it was nice that they kind of got to show you that. Yeah, in fact, they were talking about, you know, these different, like, creatures, right? One mm. was a serpent, and then one was a basilisk, which, here's the craziest thing. Back in D1, I knew that the Suros weapons icon was, in fact, a basilisk long before it was ever officially called a basilisk. And everybody was like, oh, it's a cool griffin, eagle, dragon, whatever. I was like, nah, man, that's a basilisk. That's a chicken dragon. Which I always thought was fitting for Suros as a weapon, because if you know anything about mythology, the mythological creatures, the basilisk, if it looks at you, you're dead.
You are
If you
killing me
look at
with
it back and
that.
stare into a basilisk, yeah, it will kill you. And so I thought it was funny because Suros is like an elegant, beautiful weapon, foundry, whatever. And so I always thought about, well, if looks could kill,
Yeah.
you'd all be dead.
Well, yeah. Are you doing it on purpose? I'm trying not
Yes.
to be mean. Okay.
Yes, I am. Yes, I
Okay.
am.
It was so hard because I was trying to find if I could quickly find the thing that gave the confirmation of Ahamkara.
Well, just type in shapeshifter. I think that was the key word in D1, right? That we saw first.
I mean, maybe.
No, maybe
Let's.
not.
Like if
Maybe
it
it was
was,
No, that definitely wasn't it. It was something else.
there's an item called Shapeshifter. It's a grenade
Yeah,
launcher.
that was D2 early. Yeah.
Oh, it's a
Yeah, that
Wendigo
got me
ornament.
going too. Of course it is.
Yeah. Because nothing says
That's my
Shapeshifter
people's.
like Wendigo.
Yeah.
Split Shifter Pro is a fusion rifle. Yeah, I don't know what it was. I forget what made me think it. And it's actually bugging me because there's like we've been doing this for so long and it's like, we have these random thoughts, we throw
I
them out there
know.
and sometimes they stick and
And
sometimes they don't.
then you start to and then you start to amalgamate things that you think you know.
Yeah.
I
I
there was
forget that
a
some people said one thing
so
and I'm like, I said that.
I'll tell you the one thing that I constantly go back to. And it's Monolith Bleed. And Monolith Bleed in D1 was an armor set that I guess you'd say it was like, I don't know, the thing I thought about it was it was tied to the warlocks obviously, but I always thought that it had something to do with like a particular faction of warlocks. But in that Monolith Bleed, there's a particular lore entry or flavor text, and it was in a broken fortress at the heart of a poisoned land lies the Wishmaker. And so we thought that was really cool because we got the Dreaming City with the Nahamkara dragon, and the Dreaming City was poisoned. And this lore or this flavor text was years before we ever got that raid. And I thought it was pretty cool. It was like a little seed that they planted.
I think it was Albios. Remember that
Oh,
old
that's one of my favorites as well.
yeah, the
The
five
five
lives of
lives.
Albios,
Yeah.
because I know he has the one where the Ahamkara spoke to him on Venus, took with him into the swamp a single lantern, talked to Ikora, answer the void for the last time, make it count. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, no, that was a good one. Albios is a great one. So
Oh yeah, for sure. It's a yeah.
Salacen Fane was the I guess the warlock.
Do we not know that they transformed until Forsaken? That can't be right.
No, we knew there was something. You're right about that. We did know something about them being shapeshifters before D2 came out. And D2 came out, and then they started playing more with that word. And so that's kind of what our confirmation was. It's like, okay, it's definite now that they're shapeshifters. I wish I could find that exact. I think you're right. I think it was in Rise of Iron that we got the first mention of them, changing their shape. The cool thing about the, I will say this, the cool thing about the Ahamkara as a whole is, you know how the Witness has been playing or has been telling us his idea of the final shape, or their idea of the final shape, is the calcification of the universe into a final perfect shape, right? And so we have many different representations of the calcification of the universe into a perfect final shape. And what I mean by that is we have many entities within Destiny the game that all have done some version of it. And I don't think all of them per se, but most of them. The Hive is the most obvious with their chitin. They chitinize themselves with their armor. And there's even a few lore entries that talk about, the calcification. And I mean, the calcified fragments, that's one too, but that could have been directly tied to the Witness now that we know all this lore about them. But there's also Ahamkara and bone in its own right is calcium calcified, and it speaks to you after death. So it's almost like this has something to do with what we know about the ominous statue of the female figure that's been veiled in a statue in a it's almost like a stone calcification. The Witness has on board his ship, from what we've seen and amongst other architecture, these stone objects, and even his obelisks that he has thrown about are sliced, calcified stone objects. He has monoliths that are frozen, structures or entities, air quotes, because I'm not sure what that is. I have to kind of like put an asterisk by that. He has dissected the worms, to kind of figure out if I don't know why, but maybe to, understand if everything's going correctly. The horse figures that, it's these weird, almost abstract, surrealistic or surrealism amongst his architecture that kind of, seems to bleed into this whole idea that the final shape is very much just, frozen, calcified perfection. Basically winnowing everything from the universe that doesn't matter down to a perfect final calcified shape. And you can even kind of glean that from the Vex too. The Vex are made up of a cellular matrix, which we call, we name them after what we know, in real world, in real life, I guess, is the radial area, Radiolarian. Radiolaria in real life is small cellular calcified living structures that, wash up in the ocean, are all over the seas, and they're tiny little living organisms made out of calcium structures that make these perfect little lattice works and come out in all these different shapes. So it seems to me that, like, very early on, they had an idea and they kind of just, expounded upon it. And just they keep doing these little callbacks to it without actually defining it. And maybe that's because they never actually knew a finite answer, but maybe they did, maybe they didn't. But it's interesting to know that it's always been there in the background, just like Ahamkara. I've always, even in death, they've always been there in the background. And then they throw in things that hint to the next season. And so this will be my segue into the lore card. because they dropped the Hinterland armor set on us, or the other ones are named something else, but the Hinterland armor set, which very much has Ahamkara adornments on it. And I think that's fitting because we got that boom right with Season of the with the Witch, and here we go into Season of the Wish, which obviously is an Ahamkara. It has a lot to do with the Ahamkara because as we saw at the end of this season, there's an Ahamkara egg now.
Yeah. This really is this has really derailed from what this episode was supposed to be about. Because now you got me
Sorry.
thinking. I was like, where did I found my first tweet about Ahamkara. I've been like looking for like wherever I could have said it, and I said that I was beginning to think that Ahamkara aren't dragons but ascendant beings from another plane of existence with flair, and that was the earliest thing that I could find that I'd said about them.
Interesting.
Which, so. Okay, wait, no, we're gonna save that for next week.
Yeah,
So
of course.
this week we have a lore card. Would you like to get into the lore card before we get into the lore book?
Yeah, of
Okay, so
course.
brought to you from Destiny Armory Refined, we have our weekly lore card.
Sorry to, go so long-winded on that, but I
Yeah.
felt it. I felt it necessary, because
Yeah.
it kind of lays, it just kind of lays the groundwork for just like a wider path of thinking now that we know some things, right?
Yeah.
And
And
so
it's.
if you have that, if I can plant that seed in your mind as we're going to digest some of this other lore, maybe we'll have a little bit more of a wider window.
It's also like, I'm just thinking, knowing what the lore card is, it's a Hinterland cloak, which, as we talked about last week, these are like absolutely Ahamkara themed. I'm just like, we're never going to get off Ahamkara if I don't put a stop to this right now, because all I could think about is Ahamkara and wanting to do Season of the Wish, but I want to wrap off the season's
It's
lore
okay.
book. So
It's okay. It's okay. It's okay. Yeah. Well, this will be good though. All right. So, and it's not a long one.
yeah.
I mean, it is what it is. So, Hinterland is a German word. It basically, to dilute it means the land behind. It's a land beyond what is visible or known. So that's kind of interesting. The flavor text is what I kind of picked up on this particular item, because there's a set for the hunter, there's a set for the warlock, and there's a set for the titan, and they all have different names, but each one of them has a name that is very much tied to the idea of the Ahamkara being from another unseeable, unknowable plane of existence is the easiest way to wrap it up in a tiny bow. So the flavor text on this particular item for the hunter is red in tooth and claw is mentioned, and it's basically there's no winning the ancient game of blood, tooth and claw, and so that's them playing with an iconic saying, which is a reference to the violent nature natural world in which predatory animals unsentimentally cover their teeth and claws with the blood of their prey. And it comes from Alfred Lord Tennyson, and he was the first to use that poetic prose, whatever you want to call it. So just to define hinterland. Hinterland refers to the inland or rural areas that lie beyond the immediate urban and coastal regions. So that's what we use. That's how we use it today. It encompasses the underdeveloped or less populated territories found away from major cities or industrial centers. Hinterlands typically have a distinct character, often featuring agricultural, natural landscapes. And they may play an important role in providing resources such as food, raw materials, to the urban and coastal areas. The term now is often used to describe those remote or less accessible parts of a country or a region. They're also used to express a remote or unattainable land, sometimes teeming with wildlife. So, hinterland is almost synonymous with a wild area that's not easily accessible, right? And so that's kind of a catch-all for any type of environment that is like that. It doesn't have to be the woods or a jungle or an island landlocked, you know, with just, or Jurassic Park, you know what I mean?
It
It
does need to be Jurassic
doesn't have
Park.
to be any one. It doesn't have to be any one specific area. It's just a word to basically say, hey, that over there is hinterland. It's really hard to get to, and it's probably teeming with wildlife. Or, you know, it's really hard to get to, and it's got a lot of wild environment to it. So, anyway, Alfred Lord Tennyson's red tooth and claw phrase refers to the brutal and primal nature of the natural world. It symbolizes the inherent violence and predatory instincts found in the animal kingdom, emphasizing the concept of survival of the fittest, which is kind of this whole, you know, destiny or universe we live in. We've heard that before, survival of the fittest, quite a lot. This phrase is often used to depict the harsh reality of nature and the absence of mercy or compassion in the animal kingdom. So if you can imagine, like, you know, a tiger going out and eating, you know, its prey, it has to survive. So there's no like feeling involved with that. It's just lunch, right? In the same way you pick up a sandwich and eat it, you know, if it's ham or, you know, turkey or whatever, you're removed from the kill, but it's very much lunch to you, right? There's no feeling involved. But this is in a predatory sense. So, like, you know, predator and prey in the natural world. And so Tennyson employed this phrase in his works, and it particularly came from his poem In Memoriam AHH, which this particular poem has been cited in Destiny several other times. Why I think it's interesting that they keep bringing it up. And maybe the authors just all have, you know, a fondness for this, but it is an iconic thing to look up if you ever are interested. But In Memoriam AHH, it explores the conflicting notion of love and nature in relation to the human experience. And so I put the poem, if you will, on here. But you can look it up. I won't read it, but you can look it up if you want to.
Did we read
But
this one last
basically in
week?
there,
The poem, I mean?
no,
I
I
know
don't think we
we've
did.
been
I think
reading
we
a lot of
just
poetry
kind of,
lately.
yeah. Yeah, we have. This is like a personal type of reflection on why is life so hard, basically. And love is just as, you know, and love is there too. And then, like, what is God? And, like, why are we here? There's a lot in this poem. But if I were you, I would go look it up. It's In Memoriam AHH, and it's 56, and it's called So Careful of the Type, but no. So it's kind of these. He wrote a lot of these things, which were almost like poetic memoirs, if you will, of just why the hell are we here? Why am I going through this? You know, just these little moments in time where he was just kind of like, what is this? And this particular one was pretty cool because, you know, he cites this idea that there's something behind the veil, you know, of life. And we don't know about it. And why does life have to basically be so just un you know, doesn't, you know, it's like the predator and prey. Why? It's just lunch. Why does it not care about me, you know? This life that I'm living. Anyway, so that's hinterland.
So it's funny, I had it. I just closed it. It's funny that you mentioned an area lying beyond what is visible or known. And just to go back to the earliest thing I said about Ankara, that being ascendant beings from another plane of existence. And it's just like, it's just one of those things that really make me excited to feel like,
So now how I view the Ahamkara after all these years is just they're here in our they're here, right? But they exist in a higher realm of being. And I'm assuming that the Ahamkara are the conduits on how they manipulate and interact with us in our locked universe that destiny is. Because destiny for me now, as we've gone on to learn a lot about our environment and universe, destiny to me is very much a universe that has been somehow isolated from all other parallel timelines and whatnots and other universes. And we are in that centered of that in that particular universe, but there's outside forces coming in and out, manipulating us. And we're even using the ghost to pull from other timelines and universes. And even the Exo Stranger has found a way to manipulate and move through those, I don't know, nexus points and ley lines, if you want to call them that,
Well, ley lines
paths,
are already a
whatever.
thing, and I don't think that is
Oh
what
yeah, that's
she's
right.
doing.
I won't say ley lines because that's a Mara thing. Never mind. So Mara's done that too with her ley
Yep.
lines.
There's a lot of shared terminology.
Yeah, there you go. And the Vex even seem to move beyond, like, time is not linear, but
Yeah.
that's a lot for a head to wrap around.
All right. You know what I just realized?
What?
I didn't have your image up. I was doing something.
Oh, for the it's
Yeah.
okay.
Yeah, because I was having internet or computer problems, I opened the stream for a minute and then I was just like, no, I'm keeping an eye on everything. I'm like, that doesn't look good. I should close the stream. I can't have I can't have it open or it's, so I
Yeah.
closed it and I because I didn't have it in front of me like I normally do. I didn't notice your image wasn't there because on this screen I have you without anything, and on that screen I have what everyone else sees. It
That's
just
funny.
occurred to me. Okay.
Yeah,
Sorry.
that's a big thing to do at the beginning of an episode that has nothing, well, it has everything to do with it, but it's just not what we're focusing on.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I thought it was good because everybody wants to talk about it right now, and it's really hard to avoid that
Yeah.
because Ahamkara is now the center focus, and I guess for people like you and I, it's always been kind of a central focus for
I've
us.
never forgotten them. We never stopped thinking about them.
We
And
always think about them.
a big reason why I do want to wait to do it until that Sunday is I'm hoping that the press kit will come out between now and then. And that
Oh, that
way
would be
we might
great.
have some more things to give us better grounding for theories. Because right now it's just Season of the Wish. Here's an Ahamkara egg. Here's an image of Guardians with an Ahamkara that looks like Riven, but we're very confident it is not Riven. And it's like, yeah, because it's an Ahamkara.
Dude, that's funny.
So just exactly that, right? Like it's just that. Give us more time to think about what it could be, because as of right now, the only theory I've seen that I agree with at the very least is that next season we will not be fighting an Ahamkara. We will be aided by an Ahamkara because that one promo image that they do have, it appears as if we are coming out of a portal with the Ahamkara behind us, as if we're coming up together. Not we're not adversaries, we're allies. And I think that's really interesting. I think that's a really good point. I forgot who said it, and maybe they didn't even say it first, and they were just parroting something else from someone else. But so I didn't come up with that, but I do agree with it, is all I could really say.
Well, I like it because it's cool because it makes me go back, and research things that I knew about before. Like I brought up at the beginning, Monolith Bleed. The reason why I went back to it is because of this tooth and claw phrase that was used. And tooth and claw is the arm, band for that warlock set for the Monolith Bleed, which they don't explicitly call it out back then, but the tooth and claw phrase is weird. Like on that particular bond, it said something like reality was from the carcass of like a bunch of stuff that could or may not have happened or something like that. I
And
won't look it up, but yeah, it's just kind of like that's an
yeah,
Ahamkara thing.
teeth and claw. When it comes to Destiny, teeth and claw is often associated with Ahamkara, but as always, there's a lot of things that kind of like get shared across. Where I think last episode we were talking about the Maw, and it's like, is the Maw Xivu's throne world? Is the Maw some other unknown thing? Is the Maw the Leviathan? There's so many possible things it could have been, and who knows?
Who knows? Who knows? I can't wait to figure it out, though.
Do you think Nyx was an Ahamkara? Fang of
No,
Nyx?
I just think that was a way to, tie in some old mythology,
And
like an
that's the other
expression.
issue with this, where it's like, other games, they would be like wholly independent, where it's just like, yes, we are not, no one will be named Osiris, no one will be
Yeah,
named,
you're right.
this. And because of that, we never know. It's like, okay, are they just throwing a reference at us, or are they throwing something important at us? And it's hard to differentiate the two.
Well, it's like it's like Batuta, right? You brought that up a year years ago back with
Batuta.
Seth
Yeah, I was
Dickinson.
gonna say Seth's.
That's his call name, but Batuta is also an Armaset, and
Oh,
like
is it?
yeah, but it had nothing to do with Seth. Just another writer brought in Batuta, and it wasn't Seth Dickinson that wrote that armor set in. So it's just kind of funny, like
Yeah, there it
some
is.
things just happen.
Some of the city's best-selling authors are hunters turned travel writers.
See, it's like it could be somebody playing with somebody else, or who knows.
Yeah. Batuta 1.0.
If you don't know out there, people on the internet, Seth Dickinson, when he first was writing the lore or the these flavor texts for armor sets,
Yeah, that was
they
his first
there was
job.
something lost in the translation of what's legendary, what's exotic, what's common, what's rare. And so he put a lot of time and energy in some of the most like basic armor sets, thinking that
Yeah.
they were more important.
It was specifically the rare weapons and armor sets, because when they told him these are rare, in his mind that meant like, oh, these are like really unique, these are rare. And I can understand where he's coming from with that, so that was like early D1 stuff, where it's like, why do these blues have all the like important stuff, like blue pieces that are talking about Pahannan and Dredgen Yor? And it's just like, what? Why haven't I seen that? It's like, because it's a blue and you dismantled it because you have your purples and you don't give a shit about blues anymore.
Well, what's funny is, remember at the close of Destiny 1, the last year, they went back on a lot of those rares and made them
They made
legendary.
them legendary. Yeah, that was great. Because that was the only way that you could actually wear them on top of it all, because there was no transmog system. So it was just like, if it's not purple, you will not wear it because it affected your light. Okay.
Correct.
Well, so we have this lore book, Rites of Passage. It's eight entries. It doesn't really have like a central theme. It's not like one story. It's kind of like a collection of stories of the people who are experiencing the events of the season, Eris and Shax and the Drifter and Ikora and Savathun and Nemaru and, this, et cetera. Elsie, Mithrax. And so this time, I decided when making these notes, I just want to let everyone know, I decided to try to do something a little different. Instead of just summarizing the entire thing, I just gave like a brief intro to what it is, and then I tried to find if there was any moments of like discussion around it. Because I think that's more fun to listen to than just have blah 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 blah. Like, if we're not gonna at least read the whole thing, we should try to incorporate a discussion around the card. So
Yeah,
hopefully this is organic.
I think that's good because, and I don't know what our listeners are into particularly, but when I'm listening to podcasts myself, sometimes, just hearing people just go through every word is kind of droning.
And that's what I wanted to avoid. I wanted it,
Yeah.
and please, if you're listening and you like it or you don't like it, either way, you can let us know. You can let us know on Twitter.
Yeah,
You can
let us
email
know.
us. I think we have an email. But so in any case, so this lore book, Rites of Passage, the first entry is process. So in this entry, Saint and Osiris help Mithrax in fixing his splicer gauntlet while discussing the bargain made with Savathun. And this is a big deal for Saint and Osiris specifically. Mithrax being thrown in here has one little thing that I think is more important that you don't notice until like entry three, where he says Mithrax had mentioned that his splicer gauntlet had been causing his arm to go numb, so we'll just keep that in mind. And then which at first you just think, okay, yeah, it's technology, maybe it's just doing something weird, right? Big deal, move on. And that's when I was going through these, that's how I felt. I was like, oh, okay, just, plot device to get them talking, right? But Savathun is very obviously a sore point for Saint and Osiris, because way back now in Season of the Hunt, Osiris was overtaken by Savathun when Sagira was killed. Was that Season of the Hunt?
Yeah, it was.
Okay.
Season of the Hunt, man, was a sleeper season.
I
People
mean,
were not in tune with the lore on that one as much.
I feel like I was, and I just didn't think it was a very great
No.
season.
I know, but like you and I were digesting the lore like big time, but most people weren't even consciously aware of what was going on. Like with Xevu of Wrath and the lichen and the plant-like structures. And yeah, anyway.
As proven this season, when we were fighting Fallen in Savathun's Spire or the Altars of Sorrow or whatever the hell the activities are, we're fighting Fallen in them. People are like, "Why are there Fallen fighting on behalf of the Hive?" And it's like they're Wrathborn. We
Yeah.
had a whole thing about them. They're Wrathborn.
Yeah. Guys, they're Wrathborn. Come on.
It's no one remembers that season whatsoever. And it's
So
because
funny.
it came out, what did that come out with? Beyond Light?
Oh yeah, it was, wasn't it the second season of Beyond Light or something like that?
It would be the first. It was either Beyond Light or Witch Queen, and I don't think it was Witch Queen. I think Witch Queen had
Yeah, it
risen.
wasn't Witch Queen. It wasn't Witch Queen.
So, I mean, it just got, and Beyond Light wasn't like the bangerest of expansions either, but when you have two stories happening at once, you kind of don't pay attention to either of them. You don't get to,
That's true. Yeah, that's true. And didn't we think at that time that maybe they just dumped that because it was supposed to have been a part of a much bigger expansion?
I mean, maybe,
Yeah.
I don't really recall that, but I wouldn't be surprised if that was some of the ideas going around. But
It
yeah,
just
so
felt like that.
yeah, and it feels like that quite a bit, where it's like I didn't really want to get into it, the previous happenings at Bungie,
Yeah.
but it's just like it's very frustrating that game companies. Video games are an art form, and they're trying to make an art form work in the nonsense capitalist idea of exponential gains in your money, where it's like, well, we only made 1 million this year and we were really trying to make 1.25 million, so we have to fire all of you.
I guess the thing to say, because it sucks, right? It just sucks. And so I guess the thing to say is that it sucks that gaming and art are not immune to the horrific capitalist, the big company money hunger greed that we wish it could be.
And it's like in the perfect world, and that's why I bring it up. In the perfect world, it would be realized as an art form, and it would be realized that you can't just make it and publish it, and it there it is, and there it is, and there it is, and there it is, and it's gonna happen. We're gonna take our time. We're gonna make it right. And if it if when they were working on it felt like it wasn't fully there, they'd be like, all right, well, then it's not happening because it's not ready. Why would we give you something that's not ready?
It just makes you reflect on all the games that came out too early and then ended up being beautiful. I mean, Destiny was one of them too. The very beginning of
Destiny was
Destiny
one of
was the
them.
same. And then it flourished into this amazing thing. You know, Cyberpunk, same thing happened to that. You
I'm
know,
very
just.
excited that Cyberpunk was able to like pull through and make
It's
something.
amazing now.
I haven't played it. I don't think it's the type of game for me, but I'm excited for other people. I actually had a friend who he got Cyberpunk at launch, but like in the year leading up to it, he was like, "It's gonna suck. I'm excited for it, but it's gonna suck." He was like, "People don't remember that when Witcher 3 came out, it was not good, but then it got good." And he's like, "It's gonna suck at launch. I'm gonna get it. I'm gonna play it, but it's gonna suck at launch." And he was he was right on the fucking money with that one.
That's how I feel every time Halo comes out with a new
Yeah,
game.
it's gonna suck at
It's gonna
launch.
suck at first.
Yeah, and it's like so, but it's because of that bullshit, where it's like you could have made something
It's
great,
the
you could have delayed it. And you would have never gotten the bad press to begin with, and you would have gotten more people into it excited at the start, and more people having a good time talking about it at the start, rather than make all this like bad blood and then rely on like community to like
Yeah.
YouTubers and podcasters and just people on Twitter and shit to hype up your game and be like, no, but guys, it's good now. Like
Yeah.
you're relying on that because you've broken the trust of people who bought the game at launch. And it's
Yeah.
unfortunate.
Well.
But yeah, so way back in Season of the Hunt, Osiris was taken over, and we didn't learn he was taken over until his suspicious actions 3 seasons later, Season of the Splicer, where he seemed to be coordinating with Lakshmi to have a Vex invasion in the city against Mithrax. So that's why it's like all three of them are kind of together now, I think. It's kind of like a way to kind of make people think back to those moments.
Yeah, that's probably, like the authors are trying to say, hey, remember this
Yeah,
because
it was
it'll be
2 years
relevant.
ago, but do you remember this? It's still kind of important.
That's interesting.
And so then moving on to the second entry is a matter of distrust. And in this entry, Elsie is very upset with the freedom of unchecked power Eris has been given. So, Season of the Witch, Eris becomes a hive god, and she's the god of vengeance. She's getting tithes from guardians. Very, very risky, because Elsie has lived through many dark futures, and there's one dark future that we've actually got to read along.
Oh, that's right.
So I was just trying to give you a moment to chime in case you wanted to. I'm trying not to talk over you.
I was just, I'm
Yeah,
listening.
in the dark future that we are aware of, Eris became so powerful. She became corrupted by unchecked power. She became so powerful that she was actually the lord and master of Savathun and thus the hive. So like she owned the Scarlet Keep, and she was so unchecked, her reach didn't just extend to Savathun and the hive, it also corrupted Anna, which caused Elsie to kill Anna, her sister. And that seems to be what actually causes her time loop. Whenever Anna dies, it seems that Elsie loops.
Yeah. Why do you think that is though? Is that just like because of the confines that she was working in, like point A to point B, whatever allowed her to, drift on the rift?
I think what it comes down to ultimately is that there is a something that happened, right? Something caused her to start the loop, and that's the key. And
Is it like almost like a traumatic event left a marker and
yeah,
then,
well, it's like because she's an exo, right? And I think she was one of the early exos too. And exos were made with Alkahest, which is what happens when you pass Radiolaria through stasis or clarity control.
Clarity
And
control, which is stasis.
yeah, which is stasis. And so that's what creates Alkahest, and that's what effectively like replicates the humanity with inside an exo. And so maybe in those early models, maybe even all exo have this potential of kind of like time shenanigans. And so if Elsie is repeatedly looping back timelines, and whether it's the witness's success or Anna's death, we're not really sure, but I think it's Anna's death, because if it's the witness's success, it was premature in the dark future that we know.
Yeah, it would make sense. That's cool to think of it that way, though. Like, what unlocked that loop
Yeah,
could have been just,
that's the real question. What unlocked the looping ability? And I think it has to be something to do with Vex. Maybe there's and the real kicker on it, right, is she's been through so many so many time loops that she can't recall those like earlier ones, because she didn't find her Pooka until later on, and it was her Pooka that was able to like kind of restore her memories. So there might have been an event in her original timeline where something happened, like Anna died, and she, driven by Anna's death, natural death in the original timeline, she tried to did whatever to create this time loop, and then in going and failing and failing and failing and failing and failing, like forgot that she herself is the reason it started, that she created something to cause those time loops.
Dude, that's pretty cool though.
Yeah. Time travel is a tricky thing to write.
It is. I mean, it all has to have, like a semi relevance. Otherwise, it has to stay really ominous in the background. And
Yeah.
I think they did a good job of trying to like keep it confined and not so ridiculous,
I had to stop myself there because I was just thinking, would that this hoodie were a time hoodie? And God, time travel's really hard to write about. But
So,
stuff. Oh, go on.
yeah, no, I was just gonna say there's like I won't do it, but there's some tricky things that can happen when you're messing with time and in sci-fi. One of the biggest pitfalls is this concept of, well, in science they call it the Gem particle, because it's very much a particle that exists but doesn't exist in just period. There's this particular particle that we can see it, but as soon as we see it, it no longer exists, right? That's crazy. So it's kind of like this idea that, the world is, or the universe is not nothing, because nothing is everything. Nothing is the most part of the universe, right? the universe is not just a empty vacuum. The void that makes up the universe is a lot of stuff, you know, antimatter, dark matter, all of these things. The universe is full of it. Matter is, you know, the minority of the universe. So anyway, so there's this thing that happens in sci-fi where they try to avoid this pitfall, and this pitfall is called the Djinn particle, and it's basically where if you use a particular item in your storytelling, and then somehow go back in time to use that item that was from the future back in time, and then from back in time back to the future, whatever, that item could never have existed in two places at the same time. So it's this idea that, well, if you took it from back when it, you know, from back in time, and they brought it to the future to give it to yourself from back in time or whatever, that piece of whatever it was, that object, that thing, it never existed in the first place. So there's this sci-fi pitfall that they say, you know, don't use an object that, or don't use a concept or an object that has to travel in and through time, because if you do, you can't like give it to your future self from, you know, back in time to go back in time to get to your future self. Stuff like that. It's one of those funny things where they always play with like why Back to the Future could never have happened, really, you know.
I'm not sure if I
Like
understand.
the almanac, right? Remember the almanac? It's one of those points of contention where if we had given it to Biff and he created this whole timeline of events where he had the almanac to see the future and he went and played the lottery.
The paradox it would create.
Paradoxical, you know, things. Well, the almanac itself would have never existed.
Yes, it would.
Yeah.
The almanac would. I agree, there would be certain things that would that could possibly cease to exist, but Biff getting rich does not stop a sports almanac from being created. You know, like that's one of the
Exactly. So there's the original almanac, right? But it could never existed beyond that in any other timeline.
I don't understand.
Yeah, it's I won't do that to you, but there's a it, look it up. It's called the Djinn particle. It's
Yeah,
pretty
because
cool.
when you were talking about that, it made me think of this comic I read where like 100 years ago this bad guy had a demon at his control, and then one day when he needed his demon most to kill the good guys, his demon disappeared. And
Oh,
so
that's funny.
a hundred years later, his descendants, who have now basically been ground into the dirt, like you're now peasants, you used to be kings, summons the demon. And it was him summoning the demon from his ancestor that caused them to be ground into the dirt. And he's like, "Oh shit, I did it to myself." And yeah.
That's great.
So that's what you were making me think of when you were
Yeah, no,
saying
that's a
like
good
gem
one. I like
particle.
that. I like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Time travel can be fun, but you can't make it too convoluted. It just needs to be like simple. So before we move on from this entry, back to Elsie being very upset about Eris, because in the dark future that we've read, Eris basically caused Elsie to kill her sister. So Elsie says it's in her voice. She sounded small. She's truly afraid. Ikora realized you can hear it even through her hive transformation. When she speaks, she's smiling. Elsie took a careful breath. When she led her troops from the Scarlet Keep, when she attacked the Traveler, when she turned us against each other, and I was forced to. Ikora reached out a hand to stop her from having to say it. To kill my sister, Elsie whispered, pleading for understanding. To kill Anna. Eris was smiling that same smile. So it's like,
Dude.
yeah. I understand why Elsie's like, don't, nope. We cannot let Eris fucking do this because look how bad it went. So, entry three, we have auspices. Drifter, Zavala, and Mithrax all visit the Anatheum and are drawn to the Deck of Whispers. They visit individually, not at the same time, and each receives a fortune. So the first one to come in is the Drifter, and being the Drifter, he flourishes the cards and he flips over the top one and he pulls the Harbinger, and he says the entry reads, as he stared into the card, the magnitude of Eris's undertaking loomed large in his mind. For one dark instant, he allowed himself to consider the possibility of her failure. Don't worry, Moondust, he muttered. You got this. He casually placed the card back on the t on top of the deck, and when you're done, I'll be waiting. So that's the first thing I want to discuss. What the fuck? What is he waiting for? What does that mean? Why is that like so ominous?
I don't know.
Because at first, when I'm reading this, the possibility of her failure, and he's like, don't worry, you got this. And when you're done, I'll be waiting. It could be like in the event of her failure, he's like, but I'm not gonna let you be a hive god. Kind of like, I think Eris actually says that to us in the game. I'd have to go through my notes. I think Eris actually says that to us in the game, though, saying like, I need you to not let me go too far. And maybe she didn't place all her bets on us. Maybe she also said that to Drifter. And he's
Yeah,
like,
there you
if
go.
you go too far, I'll be waiting.
Yeah.
But also,
Like
he
he's
said
gonna
that
jump in and
after.
intervene.
Yeah, but also he says that after he's like, don't worry, you got this. And when you're done, after you got this, when you're done not going too far, I'll be waiting. Like waiting for what? Am I is it just me, or is that like crazy ominous?
It's so hard because, the Drifter the Drifter himself is just a character that, for everything that we know about him, there's still stuff we don't know. And so, I don't know. I just leave that there because,
Fair.
his whole involvement with the Nine, dude, that's just like,
Yeah, when's that coming back?
yeah, that's just like beyond comprehension at this point as to where does this whole concept fit in,
I was just going to
like,
say that too, because they kind of dropped the Drifter Orin love story.
yeah. And and this game is our community is really bad with this game about just shipping everything that says, I care about you.
Yeah. No platonics.
It's like you can't just love somebody,
No.
and just say like I love you, and
Yeah.
all of a sudden you're like having a relationship and fornicating in the bathroom, or it's like you can't just care about somebody deeply. Anyway.
Yeah. So the next person to visit is Vala. And he draws the lament, which there's really nothing to his. He gave a plaintive chuckle. Perhaps the oracles were not so difficult to interpret after all. And it's just like, yeah, he's a sad man. He's kind of rubbing his nose in it. And then the third one, Mithrax. Mithrax is the interesting one. So you might remember, you should remember. At the start of this, I said how Mithrax had mentioned that his splicer gauntlet has been causing his arm to go numb. Well, now in this entry, Mithrax comes into the Anathema looking for Ikora. And as everyone else, he sees the deck of whispers. As his gaze came to rest on the deck of whispers, he felt a familiar numbness spread throughout his chest. Though the sensation had become more prevalent in recent months, he told no one. And if that's not enough, when he draws a card, he draws the card Ascension, which there's so much with that. And so at first, this is how Mithrax kind of sees it, right? So he draws Ascension, or let me start from the beginning. He comes in here, And he sees Eris's hive magic, and he's like very just like, ugh, what the fuck? I can't believe the Vanguard are letting her do that. Go into, you know, mess with all this hive magic. It's not okay. And then he draws Ascension. Mithrax pondered the omen gravely. It reminded him of all the tribulations his house had suffered in coming to the last city. Their ascension had been a violent and sorrowful one, filled with detractors, yet the peace and security they found among the humans had justified their risks. Now it was Eris who was walking into the sanctum of her mortal enemy to save her people. Mithrax shook his head in self-rebuke. Perhaps he'd been too rigid in his opinions regarding Eris, Morn's mission. He owed her the same grace that the Vanguard had extended to him. And so it's like, his take on it is kind of like, yeah, you did the same thing that she's doing. And in the ascension from like lowly fallen to Elixni in the city. But the numbness is what really sticks with me.
Well, then, and at the end of that, you know, he says, he slid the card back into the middle of the deck and felt the numbness in his chest recede once again.
Yeah.
So, like, so it's tied to, so his arm is very much, you know, the thing that lets him go into the cybernet and be the hacker and go hacker mode and, you know, the matrix or whatever you want to call it. And, so like his arm's numb, but now when he's messing with the card with Eris, he's feeling it spread to his chest. Mm-hmm. And then when he pushes it back, it goes away. So like there's something to this whole, you know, it just makes it parallel, right? It makes that and that parallel.
And then at as well here, before he actually notices the Deck of Whispers, he pursued the esoteric art. Or perused the esoteric artifacts littering the space with mild distaste. They reminded him too much of the relics of Nezarek, which had plagued his youth. So it's like, what is it? Is it the Splicer Gauntlet? Is it Nezarek? Like, what is his ascension going to be?
Yeah.
Because I feel like in a year from now, we're going to come back, and this card is going to be like, that was the first instance we had of what Mithrax is going through.
Yeah. Ooh, that's crazy. Yeah, and you know, there's that whole other thing to unpack where Curia was inside the and Curia was, you know, Hive, taken. Vex,
partially taken, yeah.
Mashup. Yeah, taken, Hive, Vex, mashup.
Hmm.
Interesting.
I'm excited to see Mithrax. The Mithrax season that they're obviously setting up with this. It's got to be more than just that. Like two mentions of the numbness, one from his Splicer Gauntlet, one from artifacts that remind him of Nezra. Excuse me.
Crazy.
And so moving on, our next entry is an invocation. Asa feels the invocation from Eris, a call to be the battery for the profane logic. And so this is that ritual that that Eris did, and in which she calls out Asa, Zeta, Akka, and then Sel, Aura, and Lace. That was a big one when we saw all these worm god names and proto worm names.
Yeah.
So then, dude.
So in any way, it's like, you know, because, okay, so just really quick to just point it out, it's like they're all connected in a way because they can kind of hear these chords that they're all singing across the universe, right?
Yeah.
So I just want to point that out. Like Asa is entombed on some level where she's hearing these chords coming from the other worm gods.
Yeah. Speaking of, do you want to read what I just highlighted there? Because that's kind of what you're dipping into.
Where at?
In the
entry. Yeah. So humans to a more expansive state of being, she was as a mist upon the face of the cosmos. No. Time flowed through. Oh, I'm sorry, sorry.
Yeah, you started in the middle because it was in the page cut.
Yeah, sorry. Instead, the proto-worm's attention drifted peacefully among quantum fields unspoiled by physics or matter. Her consciousness diffused from the dense thought forms used by the humans to a more expansive state of being. She was as a mist upon the face of the cosmos. Time flowed through her as a tranquil breeze. Yeah, what the fuck, dude? That's like
Yeah.
just it's that whole other realm shit.
Yeah. She was just connected to everything, like psychically connected to everything. And then the very next part is it's Asa inside like brackets and it's Eris calling out to Asa. Her serenity was suddenly eroded as if a gyre had suddenly formed beneath her mind, sucking her inexorably back into her body. She felt herself sink. And it's just like, what the fuck? Like, and so, yeah.
It's like me calling you on the cell phone, but I'm on a
Yeah.
much deeper level.
A cell phone implanted into your like soul, like not even your brain, into your soul.
A soul phone.
Yeah, call me on my soul phone. So in this invocation, Eris is calling out, saying, "I devour the free. I conspire with my vengeance." Asa suppressed the urge to recoil. Beneath the ritual words, she recognized a discordant note, one of altruism. The speaker was sacrificing themselves as well. They proposed mutual tribulation for a greater purpose, the survival of the universe. So it's not just like what the Hive were doing, where they're like, give us the strength so that we don't die in a decade, which is very self-serving. This is the
Sacrifice.
preservation. Yeah, this is a mutual sacrifice for the survival of the universe.
So that's the keynote to pick up on the vibrations of the universe, whatever you want to call it, whatever hippy dippy terminology you want to plant in here. There's like there's No, I'm trying to relate it, right? So there's sacrifice, and then there's cutting away and making perfect, right? And then so like the key markers for the two sides of the same coin, traveler versus whatever, darkness. There's sacrifice, right? And that's the key thing. Like, what connects the light or the, traveler's crap, and then the darkness, making and everything, cutting everything away that's not supposed to exist, So, out there in those, vibrations of the higher realm, it's weird. It's weird that they can talk in that level, but it's also neat that they can also see the little sparks happening across that realm, or that higher realm of ascension plane, where they're seeing the little sacrifices, and they're seeing the darkness is cutting away, stuff like that. Anyway.
The entry reads, "They fought to preserve the very cosmos as they knew it, to save it from the cruel grasp of a wounded tyrant, using the only tool they could." So, is Asa saying that the witness is wounded?
I mean, I guess the witness has always been kind of wounded.
How so?
So maybe, well, the constant like need to winnow is very much a byproduct of the veil and trying to, combine it with the traveler and then becoming the witness and stuff. So like
Okay.
without that there is nothing.
So you're saying
Without that.
the I don't know, the evolution into the witness that the people that in that they've wounded themselves.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
I can see that.
Yes.
The next entry is a big fan. Imaru wanders the city and watches a crucible match. He's very bored. This
Yeah,
is
this is
before
funny. This
this
is
is
just a
before
funny one.
Yeah. This is before Savathun was resurrected and the Zivu thing. So this is when he was just kind of being held by the Vanguard. He snuck out, he put on a different shell, he just wandered around, being an asshole. And so the entry reads, he goes to the Crucible match and he finds Shaxx, and so he goes, "I totally understand," Amaru said, chuckling inwardly at the Titan's canned rhetoric. The goal is to be the sharpest we can be, and anyone who can't handle the edge gets cut. There's a certain logic to it. And later on, it reads, the hive ghost floated toward the tower, renewed in his purpose. At least now he knew that the Witch Queen, what the Witch Queen saw in the humans. Maybe they would come around after all. So yeah. It is mostly just like a jokey entry, but there are those two bits in which Imaru sees a little more into why we might be good pawns for Savathun to use.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like, you know, it's we're a crowbar.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a very accurate way to describe us. Do you have anything more on that entry? Because that one was kind of just that.
No, I just think it's humorous when I reflect back on it, because he's like, basically, you know, the Crucible. Man, the Crucible is entertaining. You know, he's just watching Guardians kill each other, and it's just funny. Because he's like, well, that's entertaining at least. If I'm going to be bored, at least I can watch you guys kill each other.
Yeah. So the next entry is contingency plans. Imaru listens to the contingencies Savathun had set up for him to follow. And in throughout the season, we actually had a few of these as well. So we have a few. And the action that did end up happening is Eris is the one who stepped up to become a hive god. But Savathun wasn't completely relying on Eris. She also thought maybe Ikora would accept her bargain. So I'll highlight it for us here.
Yeah.
So in the event of Ikora being the one to become a hive god and, you know, acquire the tithes and everything, Savathun was a little nervous is not the right word for it, but she says that if Ikora Rey is the one to accept my bargain, your job will be much easier, because Ikora has a bloodthirst. Like, she used to rule the Crucible years ago.
She did.
And so it's just like, all right, yeah, she'll like the love to just tear apart some fucking hive. And however, if she does be the one who accepts the bargain, she'll get too powerful too quickly, which is also not what Savathun wants. And so she passed along to Imaru, if that does happen, get her to accidentally kill one of her own, and even actually suggests making it be Glint who dies, which is, I wonder if there's something more to that, if it's like trying to really throw a spike into Crow, or is Crow a potential threat?
Yeah. That's a good question. Yeah, because Crow's silent in the background right now, but he remembers everything.
Yeah, like, and he knows so who he was.
Yeah, because of Savathun.
Yeah.
Woo!
Another...
just
go on.
Real quick, I just want to point it out real quick. Real quick. This is one of the reasons why Ikora is one of my favorite characters in game, because in her youth, she was like, you know, the punk rock badass, you know, just moshing around and slam dancing her way through the Crucible and beating the hell out of people. And she didn't want to have anything to do with any kind of, like, you know, authoritarian, you know, what she would deem like religious structure, you know, or kind of like, you know, anyway, but she grew into this, you know, mentor, and she very much has accepted her role as being the teacher and the knowledge giver for the warlocks and whatnot. But even though she's this soft mentor in ways, she still has the capacity to be a violent terror, you know. Like, don't fuck with her just because you think you can, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's why she's so cool. That's why she's so badass.
Yeah.
Because that's what makes her really dangerous, is that she doesn't show. I mean, she Nova bombed a freaking whatever at the beginning of D2, the Red War. Remember?
Yeah. She the Nova bombed. I think it was two Threshers. She just like fucking took out with back to back Nova bombs.
Where is that ability?
That's his game balancing, and that drives me crazy because it's like, oh, so that's how powerful guardians are? Yeah, no shit, they're a fucking menace.
Right.
Like, my
That's
God.
funny. But yeah.
So then the another potential contestant for bargain acceptor was actually Marasov, and
Yeah.
Marasov seemed to be one of the potentially worse options for it, but it was still a possibility. In her case, Savathun expected her to figure out the pattern too soon, and I imagine the pattern was actually implying the Mbaru engine pattern, of
Oh,
which
yeah.
we then get the Ahamkara egg, because so it she says. Somehow the pattern before I'm resurrected, the guardians may attempt to take the heirloom by force. The heirloom
Oh.
being the Ahamkara egg. It won't
Yep.
be Mara's idea, of course, but my dear Osiris and his cleverness might talk them into a poor decision. And so it seems like the heirloom, the Ahamkara egg, at the very end of it all, that was like worst case scenario. If the Guardians can't deal with Zivu, I still have this Ahamkara egg to dangle in front of them, and they could use that. Or someone can use that. And that's
Yeah.
why she says, in that case, it won't be worth fighting them off. That would only play into Zivu's advantage. Instead, deliver, this is to Amaru, instead, deliver the heirloom to the Cabal Empress. She has more reason than any to use it against my sister, because
Yeah.
obviously Zivu destroyed Tora Bottle.
Yeah, Tor bottle. Yeah. Yep.
And so then the final potential bargain acceptor was the one that we got, Eris. However, Eris could have gone one of two ways. And this is kind of terrifying. If all goes to my original plan, Eris will reach a crossroads. A hint of concern snuck into Savathun's voice. At some point, she'll glimpse a path to overcome my sister without resurrecting me at all. But there's only one way to gather so many tithes in so short a time. She would have to put the vanguard to the sword, followed swiftly by the Ilixni and the Cabal. The hive she would spare, I think, for her convenience. If that happens, Savathun concluded, there are no more contingencies, no more fallbacks. The hive would have a new queen, and you a new leader. Wouldn't that be interesting?
Yeah.
So like
Good thing that
right
shit didn't happen.
yeah, but it's interesting though, because it's like right off the rip, it's like she would have to put the vanguard to the sword, and it's like, okay. They have ghosts. They come back. Do it. Right? Like it's the better option just to kill some guardians that can be resurrected. It's not like they're gonna be final deaths.
Yeah. Well, she'd have to, I guess she'd have to figure out a way to final death them all.
Well,
Because then she would just
that
be, I don't know.
Or Oryx did not need to do that to gain the power to kill Akka. Even though he killed his sisters, it was enough.
Oh,
Even
yeah.
though they came
Oh,
back, it
yeah.
was enough. So why wouldn't it be any different with the Guardian? The
Maybe
real.
it was just like what you said at the beginning. It was just a way to tide the bunch of power real quick to
Yeah.
get strong enough.
And the real hitch is that she'd have to then go wipe out the Ilixni and the Cabal, which,
Yeah.
yeah, that's not a great idea.
Messed up, dude.
But if she were to follow through with this for so long now, we have been saying that the dark future has been avoided. It's not a thing. It will not happen because Eris had us and she did everything right. But it all came down to this. This was that moment where
Yeah.
it's like, still a possibility. This is the final crossroad to bring her to the dark future. Yeah,
Wow.
really, really dodged a bullet on that one.
Yeah, we did.
Do you have anything more on this entry?
No.
Okay. And then we will continue on to A Deal's a Deal. So this is our final week there of the season. Zivu was thrown out of her throne, and Savathun was re resurrected a second time. When Ikora demanded the answers of how to enter the Traveler, Savathun informed them she had already given them the answer.
Oh yeah. This This is so
And
funny. All of this in hindsight is so funny.
yeah.
Anyway.
And so very angry, like standing up to Savathun and saying like, "We'll fucking kill you right now again if you don't give us the answer."
Yeah.
And Savathun basically just goes, "All right, take Amaru." And Amaru's mad, and Savathun says, Savathun ignored him. "Take Amaru, my loyal ghost, my connection to the light." She continued dropping to one knee in supplication. "I leave him with the vanguard willingly, so if you would rather give me my final death than stop the witness." Savathun closed her claw in a fist. Crunch, she purred. Peesh. So now I have a question for you. In this, immediately after this, actually, Amaru says, like, "Don't I get a say in this?" And Savathun says, "No, you have your orders." So are his orders just to hang out with the Vanguard, or does he actually have further orders, and that was pageantry?
Yeah, I'm gonna lean more towards pageantry.
Yeah, I think so as well. I think he's supposed to be like on the inside type of thing, just like more information to watch them. But also, she shouldn't need that because she has her song. Does she not have her song anymore because she's a guardian, a risen?
I think that's the assumption, is once you've gone risen, there's no more song.
Well, Aeris was
Because
no.
We can't just take the song. We have to, imbue it into a weapon like the Death Singer bringer, Death Bringer. We can't just use the song whenever we want to, willy-nilly, even though we went and got it, from the skulls of wizards and whatnot. It's like
Yeah.
you can't embody the song unless you're a part of that faction, people's
But
hive
we used hive magic as a
structure. I don't
guardian.
know. That's true. That is true.
There's just like a weird line being drawn in the sand of like what we can and can't do, I guess. And it's like
It's
I've been saying
interesting.
it for a while now. I would love to have our weapons like have a 3.0. Where take away kinetic and energy because kinetic's no longer kinetic. Kinetic is now kinetic stasis and strand. Take away those two slots. All weapons wherever the hell you want. You have two to pick from, and then heavy is heavy. Keep heavy the same, and then double down on it. Instead of we don't need more subclasses. That's fine. We have the subclasses. Maybe give us like a third darkness, but. Give us SIVA weapons, give us Taken weapons, give us hive magic weapons, like give us these thematic weapons that exist as
Lean into
special
it more
weapons.
than what we've just gotten.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would
And
be
they did a good
cool.
job in Season of the Witch with like the Cursed Thrall. I forget what the I think it might be Cursed Thrall, the raid weapon perks.
Yeah, it's a Cursed
Origin
Thrall
traits.
perk. Origin traits, there you go, boom.
So yeah, I would love to see that. And I think, I don't know, this weird line of can we do hive magic? Can we not do hive magic? Is it danger? If even if they were just to be like, we can do it, but it's super dangerous, and we do not want you to do it, it'd be like, all right, well, okay, I guess that'd be better than leaving us hanging.
Just dismissing it, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh crap, we're on the last one.
We're on the last one. Perfect timing. Proportionality. So Savathun has been set free and immediately gets killed. Eris, however, was kind enough to allow Amaru to check in on what happened. And so, wouldn't you guess, Saint 14 killed Savathun right away, and then lets Amaru revive her, and then he kills her again. And Amaru's not really liking what's going on, and he tries to go away. Saint 14 drops a Ward of Dawn and keeps Amaru, grabs Amaru. And it's like, you're gonna keep bringing her back, and I'm gonna let her leave when I'm finished. So this is the entry here. Savathun, Saint said, and killed her. You are very new to resurrection as a light bearer. And I think based on the structure of this, every line here and killed her is implied. So I'm not going to say and killed her because it doesn't say
Sure,
it, but
sure,
just
sure.
assume. I'm going to pause.
Yeah.
At every pause, he killed her again.
Yeah,
You are
that's
very
good.
new. You are very new to resurrection as a light bearer. In the beginning, there is a weakness when you first come back. Slice.
Kill. Yeah.
Like waking from a deep sleep from a coma, slash.
Kill.
That is why I can best you and you are still unsteady, just crushes her head.
Fatality.
You are Hive. You know suffering. You come from death. It is nothing to you.
Hadouken.
But I think maybe you do not know how it feels to be helpless.
Fatality.
I will teach you. And
Oh
then,
man, it's so good.
yeah. And so after a long time, Saint was finished. The dome vanished, exposing the X of the ghost and the god of the murky throne world sky. It's just like, Jesus Christ, Saint. He had a lot of anger.
Yeah, he
He had
did.
a
He's
lot of anger to
pissed
get out.
off.
Yeah. So Saint slowly keyed in his transport request and removed his helmet. As he transmatted out, he looked once more at Savathun. This was not for Osiris, he said, his voice hoarse and ragged. This was for me. And
Yeah.
then, when Saint returned home, Osiris met him at the door. You were gone for a while. That must have been quite the patrol. Are you hungry? And Saint 14, the greatest Titan who ever lived, fell into his open arms and wept.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's that had a
Yeah,
like a lot of emotion in
he
that.
got it all out.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, there was a I imagine it was very difficult.
Yeah, it's a good entry. And
Hey.
took his helmet off, but there was only one
Yeah.
person to see it, and we didn't get to see it.
Yeah,
And
no fucking
thanks a
Amaru.
lot, lore.
Great. So that's going to be it for us this week. As I mentioned
Yep.
earlier, we will be back on the 26th, 2 days before Season of the Wish, where we will be giving some of more of our theories about what Season of the Wish will entail, maybe the new dungeon that we'll be getting alongside that. And hopefully we'll even have the press
So
kit.
much.
If we do have the press kit, I will have those images. We'll be sharing those images and we'll be talking about the good ones, maybe pointing out some weapon previews that they have in those. I saw that the weapons in that one image that they showed, all three of them are reskins. Two are reskins from
Beyond Light.
not Beyond Light.
There's like one Beyond Light one.
Oh yeah, you know, there's one Beyond Light one. It's the horizontal fusion rifle, right?
Yeah.
What was the Cabal season? Season of the not worthy, season of the Remember that one?
Chosen.
Season of the
Yeah,
Chosen.
Chosen.
Yeah, Season of the Chosen. There were weapons from there, reskin from there. I don't mind when they do reskins, as long as they're like cleverly done reskins, like not just a
Yeah.
different splash of
Yeah.
paint. Obviously, I love new weapons, but I understand resources, money. Like, yeah, that's fine.
Yep.
Yeah, so hopefully we'll have the press kit to go over on the 26th as well. If you want to find us, you can find us at Loose Cannon Show as it is spelled there on Twitter. Our pinned tweet has everywhere you can find us. And if you came in late and you want to see the rest of the show, this episode will be going up very soon. So we hope you had a good time. Bye, everybody.
Bye.